हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 108, chapter 70, conclusion. The activities of the Lord should be followed, but they cannot be imitated. For example, Krishna's ideal life as a householder can be followed, but if one wants to imitate Krishna by expanding into many forms, that is not possible. We should always remember, therefore, that Lord Krishna, although playing the part of a human being, simultaneously maintains the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Because he's the Supreme Lord who's playing the part of a human being. So his personality, you know, it has all his features, will be there. Right? But the human aspect, that's what's the most pleasing to him. But it doesn't mean that it's not him who's the Lord who is doing that. So, we can follow Lord Krishna's dealings with his wives as an ordinary human being. But his dealings with more than 16,000 wives at one time cannot be imitated. The conclusion is that to become ideal householders, we should follow in the footsteps of Lord Krishna as he displayed his daily activities, but we cannot imitate him at any stage of our life. Right? So, the point is him, how he'd get up in the morning, he'd perform his morning duties and all that, he'd perform his duties at work, the time spent properly with the family, you know, his other duties outside, you know, that needed to be done, all these things you can follow. Yeah. Right? Because that can be followed. But to imitate, well, he had so many wives. Like, that's not the point here. He's God. He does that. We just take this part. You understand? So in other words, the parts that are the duties, how he performs the duties, that's the part we take. We shouldn't be taking the things that we think will give more sense gratification. Because, as we saw before, Krishna is not involved with his wives for the purpose of sense gratification. Because the aspect of sense gratification isn't actually attractive to him, since he is sense gratification. Mm-hmm. So what's being added? Nothing. You understand? He sits there, himself, he's self-satisfied, and so more of that is more just self-satisfied. It's like there's nothing increasing. But interacting with the devotees, now that's then what's the attractive feature. So it's the prema, the bhakti, that is attractive, not sense gratification. That's the medium you use. You understand? Let's say you have some friends. They can just be happy sitting around together and talking, and they could be doing nothing and they're happy together. Or they could do something together and be happy. Right? So the point is if you do something, it simply adds to the already happiness of being there as a group. But those who, without doing something, they can't actually function together, then that's what we're talking about. That's the material mentality. Mm-hmm. So for Krishna, there is no problem like this. Does that make sense? Because the point is, the sense gratification, he is the sense gratification anyway, since he has to enter the things, the objects themselves, that they have that form, the laws governing that, the potency behind that, the demigods that control that, that's all Krishna, the modes and nature, that's all him. So what happiness will he gain from sense gratification? Mm-hmm. Nothing. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that take it that the sense gratification is the real deal. No, it's not. Because if it is, why is the material world known as it's suffering? Mm-hmm. Why are people miserable? Because they have the sense gratification. No, but if I had this, or if I had that, or I had more, then it'd be better. But whatever we have, guaranteed there's someone who has less and wishes they had what we had, then I'll be happy. So therefore we can see is this does not satisfy the living entity. It does not satisfy spirit. The secondary form cannot satisfy spirit. The secondary is simply what you do, right? It just adds to it, like performing a play. You can perform the play, you know, Reader's Theater style, and have very nice acting, very nice delivery and all that. We all know Reader's Theater, right?
No.
Reader's Theater means you put a bunch of very tall, they're called stools. You know, stools that have four legs and just the top, there's no back or anything. And many times they have a bar at the bottom because it's so high you can actually rest your foot on it. So you have a bunch of those. Let's say you have, you know, five actors, you have five of those. And they all sit there with a book, with the script. No, they don't necessarily need the script, but there's no costume, there's no props, there's no movement. They just sit there and then read. Now and again, they might stand up to make a delivery and sit down, but it doesn't have anything more than that. You understand? But the acting, the voices, the delivery, everything is you know, perfect within that context. Now, so it's already a good drama. Now, if we put into that costumes, lighting, backgrounds, blocking, right? Blocking means the movement. Then it'll just add to it. But it's not that it makes, it's not that that's the real thing. Because if you have all those things on the stage, but no one's doing anything with them, there's no meaning. So you have to understand is the engagement of the senses only is adding to rasa. It's not the engagement of the senses. It's the medium to express the devotion itself. Right? Does that make sense? This is a very major point. You know, I mean, this basically the attachment to the idea is that it's okay, but we're engaging the senses, right? Yeah, we are, but it's not about the senses. It's about, you know, pleasing Krishna. But we're engaging the senses, yes? Yes, we are. And so then it's, you know, it's about trying to express your love and devotion to Krishna and says, yeah, that's very nice, but we're engaging the senses, getting the results, the internet, right? You understand? That's the problem. We've come to the material world simply on this point. We want to enjoy the situation, and you can only enjoy it if you control it. Right? Krishna controls the situation, therefore he enjoys it. So we want to control it, so we enjoy it. But because it's just ourselves with dead matter, how is that going to give any enjoyment? Well, we project that it should, because on the spiritual platform, it appears so. But what's missed, it's the bhakti that's giving the pleasure to the soul. Right? The nature of happiness is like an ocean, not just a drop in the ocean, a drop in the desert. Material happiness is a drop in the desert, and spiritual is an ocean, no desert. Right? Does that make sense?
The problem being, because the secondary has been used for expressing the primary.
Yes.
And the secondary has also been used in person's gratification in the material world.
Yes.
Is a common platform. Secondary is the medium.
Secondary is the medium, but the point is what changes it from spiritual to material?
The consciousness.
The consciousness. So that's the point, is that it's not the secondary. So then in that, it's not the secondary, so it's just the Bob. We don't need any of the secondary, especially as I'm not adjusted to this, you know, old, this Vedic, archaic kind of stuff. I like my new, modern, and stuff like that. And so therefore, because it's not about the secondary, it's just about my Bob. So I'm totally absorbed in Krishna, though I'm totally engaged in the secondary aspects of my conditioning. So you get the sahajya side. Or it's not about, it's just the primary, it's not about the secondary. Remove all secondary. There is no relationships, there is nothing. But you see, one, it's the sense gratification they're getting, and now and again doing something connected to Krishna and then feeling great about it. Or or it's about not dealing with it, and so then the lacking, the pain that's not there from not doing it, then we take that as the happiness. But in either case, we're maintaining I'm the controller and enjoyer, and we're dealing with secondary external things. Both of them. All karmis, all jnanis, they're all doing this. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point there, is that That's why we follow in the footsteps, because what secondary forms he uses for enacting his pastimes, you know, that the acharyas are recommending, that's what we use. But it's for the pastime of pleasing Krishna, not ourselves. Right? So that's the whole thing that we, you know, at some point we want to catch. So we have the example of how the residents of the spiritual world do that. That's the whole point. Is all the way through we have all these things being done. Right? But these things being done, we're trying to see the connection to Krishna, not the connection to the senses. Senses are being engaged, but if they're only being engaged and not connected to Krishna, that's called sense gratification. If they're engaged, it's called devotional service. Right? You know, it's just like, for a simpler example that may be easier to appreciate. We go into the kitchen, we cook a preparation. The technique for cooking that preparation is the standard recipe, right? Standard technique, standard everything. Now, whether our consciousness is about, I'm going to offer this to Krishna, or I'm going to enjoy this so much, makes the difference whether it's prasad or it's just sense gratification. So it's not that the cook goes in the kitchen and they've been, let's say they've been a cook and cooking for sense gratification, you know, their whole, you know, so much of their time. And now they come in contact with the devotees, but now every time they go into the kitchen and start cooking, then, oh no, but this is the same technique as sense gratification, therefore then they get distracted. No, not at all. You understand? Not at all. Because it's a matter of, it's a technique, they're good at the technique, they use it for Krishna. That's all. So we can say, oh, all these things are that, but it's, the point is how good are we at the thing that we're doing? Because if you're good enough, then you can contemplate what you're doing. If you're just carried away by the modes, means we're not actually very good at what we're doing. You know? Like I remember my father once was explaining how the guys that race cars, when they're on the road, they follow the rules nicely. You would never think they're a race car driver. You know, and the car they drive is just one that's solid, it works, it's comfortable. Right? It's not those fancy things with the stripes on them and all those. No, they don't. That's for the racetrack. You understand? So they're good at it. They can contemplate it. Therefore, it comes down to the point they appreciate the science of it and then applying it in the art. But you see, the young kids, they're just they're enamored by it. So they go out and do all kinds of stupid stuff. And so they enjoy themselves, but they're really bad drivers. Literally. So the point is you follow the spiritual, that if you can follow the material, the spiritual is easy. Because you have the principle of following the rules. So then the problem is not that the senses are the overlapping point. The problem is we're not used to following rules. We don't like rules. Yes.
So some devotees, they take a step further and say, if you can actually follow Vaidhi Sadhana nicely, then Raghunuga, it's easy. But
yes.
It's not necessarily, actually.
No, it is. Because the point is it's just like, let us say, someone's trying to teach you how to ride a bicycle. Right? And while you're trying to ride this bicycle, can you have a nice conversation or make plans for the day? No, you're worried about, you know, somehow or another, that tree, that drain, that old lady, the dog, somehow or another, whenever you get on the bicycle, they appear right in front of your front tire. Mystically, like, you know. But once you can actually ride it where you know all the techniques, you can do everything, where you don't have to think about it, it becomes second nature. Now you can, the mind can think of all kinds of things. So that's the point, is that if you're good at Vaidhi, then it means with the purpose of pure devotional service, then you can contemplate the pure devotion rather than the Vaidhi itself, because it's just secondary. as opposed to someone who thinks that by not following the secondary or following these rules of Vaidhi, that that's going to make me a Raga Nuga Sadaka. Does that make sense? But it's not that, but the point is Rag is independent, so someone you see just starts off on the platform of Rag without all the Vaidhi. It just means that they did that from the last life. They were on that Raga Nuga platform, they're just taking it up again this life. So the beginning of their life will be whatever was the distraction that got them to be born here again. You know, if it was the guitar, or, you know, whatever was the born again aspect, right? You know, yeah.
So does it mean that because in Vaidhi we do practice, and practice means repetition of particular process.
Right.
Therefore, when we come to Raga Nuga, we become an expert into that. Therefore, you know,
we're an expert in that, but that's not actually the point. Is the expertise? Someone who's into Vaidhi, the expertise is actually what's being offered. Right, this devotion, but the expertise in the Vaidhi is actually. Is a very important aspect of the offering. For Raga Nuga, its value is simply that it can express bhakti. Right? And so, naturally, you want to use the best for Krishna, so you'll be the best at it. That's why you always see is that it mentions when they refer to another gopi, they talk about, you know, how clever they are. Because they're very intelligent. Clever means a practical intelligence. So they're very, very, very intelligent in how to find ways to use the situation to please Krishna. Right? Like that. So that's the whole point. You have a bunch of trees, you have a bunch of grass, you have a river, some flowers, some fruit. And then they take that and turn that into the most wonderful pastimes that even Vaikuntha, that has all opulences, can't do. Why? Because they're so clever. Right? You never hear in Vaikuntha they talk about how clever someone is. Not that they're not, but it's more, they would talk more about how expert they are. You understand? While in Vrindavan they talk about how clever they are. You know, expert is just normal. So it's not even taken as a standard thing. You know, you're not using that as a measure. In Vaikuntha it will be part of the measure. So Yoga Maya, how to measure, it will be that expertise in the Vaidhi and to do nice service. So then you would choose, okay, we're going to do this service. This devotee is very expert in this service. Let's say an Abhishek, we'll choose him to do this for Krishna. And that way everybody is agreed, because they'll do the best, because it's about that good show. You understand? So there's a difference. It's the flavor is different. It's not that Vrindavan lacks anything that anything else has. No, never. It has whatever they have and more, but because the flavor is not opulence, therefore no one really notices the opulence. You know, it's like, let's say we go and get, you know, some friend takes us and we go to a 5-star hotel, you know, and we get their room, and it's like they get one of the, you know, the whatever it is, you know, the presidential suite, or, you know, one of those kind of fancy ones. And we're just looking, wow, and look at the bathroom, and look at the closets, and look at the view, and all that kind of stuff like that. Right? Yeah. But let's say someone, that's all they ever do is stay in those kind of hotels. For them, it's normal, and they'll go talk, well, you know, yeah, we stayed at this, yeah, it's a nice one, but, you know, this thing is kind of lacking and all that, this one's better. You understand? So it's just part of their thing that they do, so it's not, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, and it should, the balcony overlook, you can see the Eiffel Tower, right? You know, it should be something else. So. Yeah? No, good. The conclusion is that to become ideal householders, we should follow in the footsteps of Lord Krishna as he displayed his daily activities. We cannot imitate him at any stage of our life. No stage. And even we're more advanced. Oh, now I can do. No, you just never. We're always servant. Yeah, because that's the point Lord Chaitanya makes, is Krishna is the enjoyer. All others are servants. That's starting with Radharani and starting with Balaram. And they're the first expansions. So everyone else is servant. No one claims to be master. So if they're not claiming, then, you know, why we should tried to make the claim. Right? You know, it's like, how you say, the Sarup Shakti then is manifesting the full spiritual world and the full material world. That means the totality of Krishna's unlimited energy. Right? And as Balaram, then he's entering into every last atom of that unlimited. And if they're servants, then what's our position? Right? Yes.
Yesterday you also mentioned that Mahaprabhu said he makes two statements, you know, Jiva Sarupahai, Krishna Nitya Das. And then he says also Gopi Bharto Kamala Yor Dasa Dasa Das. So
yes.
Is it the same statement? Or
it's the same statement. It's just that one's the generic and one's specific.
Hmm.
You know, it's just like you can say is, we're devotees of the Lord. Right? Or And so then that's the generic aspect. Then within that, then we're devotees of Krishna. So that placed it from Vaikuntha into Goloka. And then within Goloka, then of Braj. Right? And then of Braj, then a specific relationship. Then within that relationship, it just gets more and more specific until it gets down to exactly who you are. So it's the same thing. So if we haven't accepted the servant part, the details aren't going to make any difference. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. So that's why you have that aspect, and then there's these other things that show what devotees are doing within this context of service. And some detail is there, and this and that, and so it's all to attract the mind of the living entities to Krishna. So it's not to get attracted to the secondary forms that these devotees are doing. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, if you try to imitate Krishna, it's always a disaster.
Yes. Yes, if we try to, it always works out bad. Somehow or another, it never works out good. We don't have one example of someone trying to imitate that it worked out good. Yeah. We need to give up on that one. You know, it's a tough one, but we have to give up on it. And then I always find we generally talk about the controller and enjoyer. But then something that's very, very important for the contemporary environment, it's always there, but especially in the contemporary environment, is we're also not the friend. Because I'm the controller of everything, I'm the enjoyer of everything, and I'm the friend of everyone. Because nowadays they can't control and can't enjoy, so then they say, oh, I'm the friend. I'm cool. I'm where everybody's, you know.
Free hugs.
Huh?
Free hugs.
Yeah, free hugs. Free hugs and, you know, all the, the modern kind of be nice, be good, like that. So we have to understand is all that comes from Krishna. You're supposed to be nice to people. It's not because you're being nice that makes that's a philosophy. No, you're supposed to be. You know, it's just like, we have this philosophy that when we go to work, we should do our work. You know? And that's, you're supposed to do that anyway. You know? So that's the thing. You're supposed to already be nice and friendly and like that. You know, something?
He says that
Krishna is the well-wisher. We can assist in that well-wishing, but if we say that this, just like when it comes to controlling, I dictate how it should be controlled. When it comes to enjoying, I dictate what is enjoyment. So, and same with friendship, I dictate what's friendship. Does that make sense? So that's the problem is, we'll dictate, which is not necessarily in line with what Krishna says is friendship. Because the point is he's there with unlimited cowherd boys enjoying his pastimes, right? So does he know friendship or not, right? How many friends can we count? Right? Like that.
You know. Up to 5,000.
Huh?
On Facebook, it's up to 5,000.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, now you can separate it down. So it's not just friends, you can make levels.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Nice. Okay. Who gets to see what? Who can put? Remember, 5,000 people and everything on their feed goes on your wall. I mean, that's like insane. It's like stupid.
Annoying.
Yeah.
Even how many is it?
Huh? Huh?
Even hundreds is insane.
No, it's just like even one person. You're there, and then suddenly it comes up about how to, you know, how to make chicken curry. It's like, why do you need that on your page? Your page. Huh? Yeah, but I'm just saying, why do you need that? You know, just because, you know, they're just. Yes. But now are you going to invite all those 5,000 to your wedding? Are you perfect?
Online
wedding. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you just down.
Just a virtual wedding.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
About this last point that you made about Suridha, we want to now become this a new fad. That Afyukas Mara spoke about this. He said that right now so much talk going on about deepening Vaishnava relationship. Let's maintain Vaishnava seminar on Vaishnava relationship. When Prabhupada was here, we just served together on some project, this and that. We preached together, and our Vaishnava relationship was forged. We didn't think so much about now all again. Before this project, we have to develop our Vaishnava relationship, and then we enter the project. We didn't think
because it means we don't. Because all it's saying is we don't have. See, before it was you didn't have it through association. You developed it. But now it's about, you know, unless you do that, then you can't actually function. So it's not that we're in a better position now than before. Mm-hmm. It's actually less. People know less about how to interact. Because if all your friends are on Facebook, you know, do you have any real friends? You know, actually, you know, they, you know, embodied, you know, they can stand there and shake their hand, right? You know, Brahma shook Krishna's hand, right? You know, like that, so... Yeah. Do they have virtual shaking also? You can shake someone's hand on this.
They wave.
Wave means one of those little yellow hands goes. Yeah. Okay. But can you change the color of the hand? If in case you're Asian, then you can make it, you know, browner or lighter. Or something. Yeah, nice.
It can be yellow.
It can be.
There are total 4 shades.
4 shades. Okay. 4 shades.
Some social commentator once commented in a funny way that you have 5,000 friends, and when you put your picture on the Facebook, you should still take a selfie. You don't have a friend to take your picture.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, previously someone else always took the picture. Okay, chapter 71. The Lord travels to Indraprastha. Pratigya, the audience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not at all commonplace. Right? So even though we see is that by great personalities it appears to be, it isn't. Or just like Srila Prabhupada would make, all these temples, deities, worship, preaching, all these wonderful things, so many devotees, it's not commonplace. It actually isn't. It's special. We may take it as ordinary and commonplace, but it actually isn't. Chapter 71 summarizes questions and answers. The rhetorical question uttered in verse 35 does not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter relates how Lord Krishna followed Uddhava's advice and went to Indraprastha, where the Pandavas celebrated his arrival with great festivity. Wise Uddhava, knowing Lord Krishna's inner desire, advised the Lord as follows. By conquering all directions and then performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, King Yudhishthira will fulfill all his purposes, defeating Jarasandha, protecting those who have taken shelter of you, and executing the Rajasuya Yajna. Thus the Yadava's powerful enemy will be destroyed, and the imprisoned kings freed, and both deeds will glorify you. King Jarasandha can be killed only by Bhima, right, because he's as strong as 10,000 elephants, right? And since Jarasandha is very devoted to the Brahmanas, Bhima should disguise himself as a Brahmana, go to Jarasandha and beg to fight with him. Then in your presence, Bhima will defeat the demon. Right? Because on his own, he may not, because they're equally matched, as we see it goes. But because Krishna's there, then he'll tell them how. And here, if he goes dressed as, disguised as a Brahmin and asks for it, Jarasandha will give it, because Bhima the great fighter is begging from Jarasandha. Why he won't give? You know, that's got to be a good one, right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So, in other words, he'll consider himself superior because Bhima has to come to beg from me. So they're not worried about the disguise and everything like that because they work in the political field. It's just pretty standard stuff, you know. Like we may go, oh no, why don't they be straightforward and can't we just all live together? And says, well, yeah, what about those 20,000, you know, the 20,000 king installment of 100,000 kings to be offered in sacrifice to Kalabhairava? You know, what about that part? No, but he's misunderstood, you know, when he was small, you know, maybe he was bullied or that, you know, because he was brought away Jara, so then he was rejected by his own family, so he's just acting out, you know, just like this, but really inside he's a nice guy. Yeah?
They can check out.
Yes, yeah, so stay tuned. Krishna will reveal what's inside. Yes. Narad Muni, the Yadava elders, and Lord Krishna praised Uddhava's plan because then it made everybody happy. Because remember, the Yadava elders wanted to address the kings first. But the way then, and Narad Muni came because he was the spokesman for Yudhishthira Maharaj. So everybody's happy by this because it takes care of everything. The previous one, about the Suridam Sarva Bhutana.
No, I mean...
means that we think we're the friend of everyone, so we simply present it how we would deal with it, you know, if it was, we were in control of the situation, but not being in control and it doesn't work out the way we say, it doesn't really...
No, but no, I mean, when you say that the person wouldn't believe in it for the acting out.
That you didn't catch that's just standard modern stuff that everybody how psychologists talk and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I understand that, but there is also like.
No, wait. Do not take this and make this about yourself. You may have had a very bad background in all this. It was not meant about that. People who are suffering and have problems, that's real. But that doesn't mean that you can make others suffer because of that. Does that make sense? So we're not that. We're making a joke about how people take this mentality to situations that actually don't deserve that. You know? Like that. If you need a further example. Then, there was one thing where it was a reality television show, but it wasn't these made up one. It was a police thing. Like that, where they would go, you know, because people were saying about the police how they're dealing and is bad and all that. And I can't remember what country it was. But they had cameras there, filmed them. They'd go. This man had escaped from the insane asylum. He had taken a girl hostage, a young girl, like teenage girl, you know, college girl or something. And they came to his house and he came to the door with the girl, holding the girl with a screwdriver under her chin. And the psychologist who is dealing with him in the insane asylum is there. The police are going to say, you give us drop the thing or we're going to shoot you. And he's saying, no, I can deal and this and that, you know, and saying all the things that I just said. So then he starts talking and this and that, trying to get it, you know, bring up the emotions to get this and that. But in doing it, he brought up the emotions and the guy took the screwdriver and jammed it through the girl's head and killed her. Then the police shot the guy. And then the psychologist said, why did you do that? We could have helped him. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the people having a rough time in the material world. So, but the thing is we have to catch, you know, what's there is that in the thing that claiming that we're the friends of everyone, we can make everything nice, they're only friends to people that they consider victims. And other people they don't care about. So they don't deal nicely. They only deal nicely with their particular narrow group. Does that make sense? So they never solve anybody's problem. Okay. Yes?
Can you say that you see everybody, I mean, ideally you see everybody as a soul and it's part of Krishna, but you know how to benefit this person in a particular situation. So maybe in this situation to kill him would be a benefit.
That's there, but we're not going to get into that as a discussion now, because that's for discussing with Manu and things like that. The point is that here's that sentiment being applied to the wrong place is always wrong. Sentiment has to be applied where sentiment is due. Right? So the point is here's somebody who's insane. You know, for whatever reason, but the point is he's insane, and insanity we know comes from too much lust. And so now he's threatening to kill someone who's not, who could actually do something. You know, what has their life got to do with this guy? You know, so to risk this girl's life for that guy's life, then it doesn't match like that. It just struck me that this may have been in Germany. Yeah. So then the whole point is that because we're misapplying sentiment, or misapplying sense gratification, or misapplying trying to organize and control things with leaving Krishna out, because what's Krishna's standard on control? What's Krishna's standard on engaging the senses? What's Krishna's standard on friendship? That's what makes real friendship. And if we make up our own, we're actually discussing things that are secondary, that are not necessarily even anything to do with the primary, with piety, let alone the primary, which is Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because if someone's threatening someone else's life, it means why they should be allowed to do that. It means you threaten someone's life, then that's the risk you take. Just like I try to steal something, the risk is I'll get caught and put in jail. You can't say, no, but I just tried and so I failed, so therefore now you shouldn't put me in jail. No, you took the risk. So they're risking someone else's life. That puts their life at risk. So therefore, if they can adjust the situation to save the person's life who is not anything involved, then that's another thing. Right? Does that make sense? So you have to be able to see what's the higher principles there, because it's about relationship. Right? So for the psychologist, it's that I can control this guy. But he can't. Otherwise, why is he not in the hospital? He was so good. Why didn't he like it in the hospital? He would have loved it there. They opened the door. He wouldn't go outside. You know? It's like people. Sometimes they have their cats. They're inside cats. They never go out. The door's open. They'll never walk outside. They'll go sit next to the door, you know, in front of the door and look at everything moving. They'll never go outside. That's because they take care of them so nicely. Why go outside? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, having to spit out feathers is overrated, you know, so they don't go. Right? Okay. No? And Lord Krishna proceeded to mount his chariot and head for Indraprastha, followed by his devoted queens. We'll find out. Stay tuned.
All of them.
16,000.
That's what I was saying. God's doing this. So God's hanging out. He has 16,000 palaces. He himself expands to each palace. Then if he goes out on a little trip, he takes all of them with them. That means it's not just him and his queens, and we can't take anything more and leave half your stuff behind because it's already too much. No, they come with all their maidservants and all their luggage. They come with their armies, and each one is protected, and it's like, yeah. And so this is the level that they're working on. And Yudhishthira Maharaj, it receives them and has places for them all to stay and feeds them all. You know, this is what we're talking about. We can't imitate. He's doing human like pastimes, but he's doing it on the level of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, it's because it becomes attractive, it becomes impressive. Because if he just went with one, then they go, hey, that's it. You know? So that's the whole thing. It means like, let's say we go to the city, or some, you know, there's some country that has a king. And then, you know, we ask about, we're, you know, seeing sights. Oh, what about the king's palace? Oh, yeah, we can take you to see. And then they take you to see there. It's just one of the row houses amongst all the other houses. And it looks the same. Would you be impressed? No. So that's the point. It's a big palace. It's this, that. That's what you want to see. So he's God. You know, it's got to be big.
Yeah. You can't measure the scale.
No, the scale is beyond. And that's him alone. And it's not that he goes just himself. Others go with him. Satyaki, others, they go. And so all these other great kings, and they go with their entourage and this and that. So it's like, it's basically like a whole country goes on a vacation march. Right, yeah.
Shyam Sundar Prabhu, he explains that the first time Prabhupada arrives to London, and he's from Calcutta, so London for him is like something special.
Right.
So then they drive from the airport, and Prabhupada is, you know, looking very carefully, you know, around the building, and they go through the central London.
Right.
And Prabhupada says to the site, Calcutta has better buildings, it's bigger than
that. Yeah, no, it is.
And he was like, why is there?
No, that means when it was said that the Calcutta was the, I forget how they worded it, the being the second jewel of the
pearl
of the empire.
Yeah.
That's only because of their false ego. Like that. Like in London, have you ever seen them or ever heard of them in history wash down the streets twice a day with Ganga water? Even just Thames water. No, they never wash the streets. That was what they did it twice a day. You know, so when it said City of Palaces, then only if you're kind of in central Westminster and that, then you have some kind of nice buildings. But this, before, everything was nice. Now and again, you see one or two left over that they haven't, your government's got them or something, so they haven't torn them down and put up high rises. But like, you know, all those shops in the front, you know, on the main, big main roads, those are all the front yards. And so then as it goes down and people don't, you know, have the money, they sell that front land for shops. But if you go behind it, then you'll see other things. You know, it's just...
Even if you look at the structure, one side of the row, about 100 meters, there are only two buildings actually.
Yeah.
And the other side, two buildings, and there is a park in between. So four houses, one big park.
One big park, yeah, on a block. Yeah, because that's on the main roads like that, like Brabourne Road, all that. Those are all really, really fancy. You see one or two here and there, but they're government buildings. That's why they're left. But one building, it's like it goes from Lower Circular Road. You know, yeah. And then the next one over is Elgin Road. So this one huge thing is there, and it's got its own road that connects a boulevard with trees and everything, connects the two roads. So they could come in from either side, or people could, you know, having a program, you come in one side, go out the other. And then there was a house, and on one side was a huge park, the other side is, you know, the house in the middle of the two blocks with parks all around it. And, you know, so that was, you know, that was
standard.
Huh? Yeah, now it's a government building. It's right at the end of Cannock Street. Like that. So it's that you just, yeah. It was, it's not that. I remember when one of our boys, he had grown up, you know, hearing about the boys talk about the West, this, that. Then he went with Purushottam Maharaj for a program. And that, you know, the Kirtan program and all that. And he went through all that. And he came back and said, how did you like it? He says, not so much. He says, the way devotees talk about the West is as if it's made out of gold. He said, it was really ordinary. What to do? Okay. Soon, Lord Krishna arrived in that city. Hearing of the Lord's arrival, King Yudhishthira immediately came out of the city to greet him. Yudhishthira repeatedly embraced Lord Krishna, losing consciousness in his ecstasy. Then Bhimsena, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadeva, and others each embraced and bowed down to him as was appropriate. Right, so it's not that he came and they all just, you know, it was a rugby, you know, scrum or something like that. No, it's just they all follow, you know, the etiquette. And we're talking Dwarka here. After Lord Krishna had properly greeted everyone, he entered the city as a fanfare of many musical instruments played and reverential hymns were chanted. So that means Yudhishthira and the Pandavas didn't meet him at the palace. They met him at the city gate. You know, so all the big, you know, fancy people or everyone, you know, major people there, they were all there. And then Krishna would come in, you know, in a very, like a, what do you call it, promenade? Like that. And then they would, all these people, be walking. So they're all walking. He may be on the chariot, but the horses are going at walking speed, and everyone can see. And yeah, you know, it goes. After Lord, okay, he entered the city as a fanfare of many musical instruments played and reverential hymns were chanted. The women of the city scattered flowers down from the rooftops, remarking on the extreme good fortune of the Lord's queens. Because they're seeing how attractive and beautiful he is in devotion, and how fortunate his queens are that they can have Krishna as a husband, right? Sri Krishna entered the royal palace, because now down there you want to be in this street and all that, you know, just jostling around and everything like that. It's really busy. So they're up on their houses and their balconies, the rooftops and that. They get the best view. Plus you can throw flowers, you know, you can, it's good. Like that. Sri Krishna entered the royal palace and offered respects to Queen Kunti Devi, who embraced her nephew, and Draupadi and Subhadra offered obeisances to the Lord. Kunti Devi then requested Draupadi to worship Lord Krishna's wives. Right? So after she's respected, because she's the senior most even of the wives, then he asked Draupadi, as the, you know, lady of the house, to you know, take care of all the queens that are coming. So that means all the queens stayed in the palace. So we're talking about serious facility. So, you know, so therefore Westminster's not that big, or Buckingham Palace, or even, what was that one? It's a little bit outside. Henry VIII took it away from Cromley or something. Yeah. It's one of his ministers. No, no. It's actually better than any of the other palaces. So he was just a minister, he an advisor. He made a better palace than Henry. So after he got rid of him, he took the palace. Huh? Crom? Yeah. But yeah, it was his palace. A really, really nice palace. But still, compared to, you know, what you see in India, no comparison. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, gratified King Yudhishthira by remaining there for some months. During this stay, he enjoyed strolling here and there. He would drive on chariots with Arjuna, followed by many warriors and soldiers. So we see is that before, you know, with that whole point of the Kandava forest, right? We did Kandava forest, right?
Yes.
So he would go out with Arjuna and all that, and then that pastime took place. So you see that that's a standard thing with Arjuna. They go out right around and like that. So Yudhishthira will be more in the palace things and that, but Arjuna, they'll go out. Shloka Anusharana, some of your verses. 1 to 11. Uddhava's excellent advice to Krishna. 12 to 22, Krishna's journey to Indraprastha. 23 to 28, Pandavas rejoice on Krishna's arrival. 29 to 45, Krishna duly welcomed by the citizens and the royal members. Verses 1 to 11, Uddhava's excellent advice to Krishna. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus heard the statements of Devarshi Narada, and understanding the opinions of both the assembly and Lord Krishna, right, because he asked, the great-minded Uddhava began to speak. Because Krishna's, you know, how what Krishna is saying, what the members of the Yadus are saying, you know, what Narada has said, and so what is all the messages they have, what they're saying, what's the mood of each. He has to take all of that and put that all together. So that's what makes him in the position he's in, is actually the, you know, the most, you could say, the most elevated, you could say, devotee within Dwarka. Because he has that ability to do all those things to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. So,
when we did the chapter on Uddhava visits Vrindavan, there it was mentioned that he is an account devotee. Therefore, it is because of this. That
it's because he's an Ekanta devotee. Yes. No, everybody's an Ekanta devotee. But the point is that it's just that his intimacy and his, so he's going everywhere with everything with Krishna. Wherever he goes, Uddhava goes. Wherever Krishna goes. He can help him in these things. You see him in his palaces, you know, just relaxing. Like when Narad Muni went, then one of the palaces, then he was there with, I think it was Rukmini, Satyabhama, and him playing chess. you know, all these things. So he's involved in all aspects of his life. Only when it's the private, just with the queen, you know, without all the maid service and everything, then that's between Krishna and the queens. But when he's in the more general areas, it means you have the general area, but we don't have to use that because each queen has their own palace. But you have the outside area of that where guests and that can come, so the queens will come out. Then you have the inner part, you know, and that which is then for only a family and close friends. Then you have the very inner part that's just for the women, and then Krishna can go in. So we see as Uddhava will be in those front two. The inside one, that's not, you know, that's the family. So his devotion to the Lord and all that is then what's the position. So it's not a secondary aspect. You know, it's not that gopis are the highest because they do rasa dance with Krishna. And if, you know, and if the cows would do rasa dance with Krishna, then that would bring them up to the equal level. No, it's not the secondary aspects. Right? It's just that we see is because of that devotion, he can reconcile all these because it's what Krishna wants. So him doing it's not because he knows the sciences so well, but that he knows Krishna's mood so well. And then he can engage that science. So it's not because he learned from Brihaspati, that's why he's in the position he's in. No, because of the devotion, he's in the position he's in. Right? Vidura, we don't hear of too much of a formal education for him, but he's the prime minister. Right? Because of his realization. So it's just that Uddhava then has all these things. Yeah. Why does India get destroyed, though? It's because people turn away. It's great because of their God consciousness, and as soon as they give it up, it goes away. You know, it's just like the father worked hard to make money. Now, if the son works hard, they can maintain the money. But if the son just doesn't follow the principles of money, he loses it. Means India's always followed their culture. But then with the, you know, when you have the Mughals coming in, it drops down a little bit. With the British coming in, it drops down more. And then with the independence, you know, it totally drops. And then with Star TV, it's totally finished. You know, it's just a matter of how much the invasion is. Before it was, they were outside. They didn't come into your house unless they wanted to, you know, pillage and burn or something. But here is that happily you invite them all in. Right. You know, so it's just a matter of if you follow the value system, then it works. And if you give up the value system, then you'll lose it. It's that simple.
So they gave up the value system, and that's what they
Yes. Did. Yeah, because then they took up the idea of modern knowledge and that's what's important. No, in the 18 means the British had been there since the 1700s. They could not control the Indians the way they wanted. So then they understood that that's because they have a completely different culture and different value system. So then the idea was is if we change their value system, then we'll be able to control them. Then, since you can't, there's a lot of Indians, right? Like that. So they decided that we can only teach the, you know, the aristocratic people of India. So then they offer that you can learn our education. And so then all the aristocratic people in that, they learned it. And so after 20 years, that generation grew up in it. Now they had a similar kind of value system like the, means they were Indian. They identified as Indians, so it backfired on them that they had the Western value system. And so they saw, you know, the Western thing is all about their independence and all this and that. And even England's history is always trying to be independent and this and that. And, you know, so therefore then, they took up that mood. So it backfired on the British. So they started the Swaraj or independence movement at that time. you know, it took them 100 years, but they started at that time. But the point is then they had that mentality, and so as it went, then as you know, instead of main, like the British maintained the kings and the culture and stuff like that to some degree, and used Manu as the laws and everything like that for Indians, you know, that, but Indians could have done that themselves and you know, all the things that were breaking down the culture reestablished them, but instead they just fully took up the Western culture because they had people in there that were not interested in it. You know, they thought that India's backwards because of this. They didn't realize that India was way ahead.
To continue with that question, if I may. At what point did this thing happen? That why would somebody feel that this is backward and this British thing that we got educated?
It's just taste. It means if you're atheistic, then you're controlled by the lower modes. So then, naturally, ignorance reverses what's proper and improper. So it's anything that comes from authority. If you don't accept authority, then you want to establish what you think is right, but to do that, you have to remove authority. So, in the Indian context, that means removing the Vedic authority. No, you have to do that. So that means anything that you're supposed to do, they say don't do. You know what I'm saying? So it's just whatever is anything that's different from the West, they'll pick that point. They won't pick that the result that they're getting from being different is not good. They'll just pick that it's different. And so, therefore, what's bad is caused by this. Right? You know, India has arranged marriages, you know, but the West has love marriages. And so, therefore, all the problems that's there in marriages is because of the arrangement. But no, it's because of the love marriage. And if they say, no, but arranged marriages, where's the love and this and that, the West is famous in the aristocracy in that for arranged marriages that are just about political and economic. It's like, you know, what are they talking about? At least in the Indian thing, there's the relationship and all that. It may, yes, you may unite two kingdoms, but they'll act properly as husband and wife. But in the West, it'll just simply be a political thing, and they may have no contact with each other. So you know, so the West is the one that doesn't know how to deal with these things, not India. Now, it's not that you can't find people doing something wrong, but the point is as you go back, there are exceptions. So just because then the Western concept, if you find an exception, that breaks the rule. The Vedic, the exception establishes the rule, because it's an exception. So that's the point. So for the regular rule stands. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like Nala and Damayanti. Yes, it may have been that aspect of a love marriage, but it was arranged. She was attracted to him, he was attracted to her, but it was all done by proper arrangement with the family. You know, they didn't elope or something. If they did, it wouldn't be in Mahabharata. It would be in Saga. I can't even remember. But it's the like 9-volume Gandharva gossip shastra. It ends with Sagara. Katacharit Sagara. Like that. It would be in there. But it's in Mahabharata, which is the essence, because of what do you call it? It, you know, the culture is being followed. It's not in Bhagavatam because they're not devotees. Like that. Bhagavatam is only those who are devotees. Does that make sense? Good? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. Hearing the statements of Narada, the assembly, Krishna and the messenger from the imprisoned kings, and understanding everyone's wishes, Uddhava being very intelligent, Mahamatihi, because he could satisfy everyone by keeping their wishes intact, began to speak, right? So how is he doing that unless he sees everyone in connection with Krishna? Otherwise, why would you bother? That is, Narada wanted Krishna to go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. The assembly and the messenger wanted him to kill Jarasandha. Krishna wanted to do both. Right? So by doing both, you actually take care of the whole system. Yeah? Uddhava said, O Lord, as the sage advised, you should help your cousin fulfill his plan of performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. And you should also protect the kings who are begging for your shelter. Right? So he mentions both. He doesn't go off and say so much about why you should do the Rajasuya. He says you should do that, you should do this. You know, because then people are going to, you know, agree that how will this be done. Then he explains. If you start to explain the Rajasuya, they'll say, well, what about the kings? So in other words, it's all about how people think and react and all that. So he's doing that according to Krishna's rules to please Krishna and the devotees.
He put the two of them at the same level.
Yes. He put them all. But of the two, then the Rajasuya is the one that will accomplish the other. So it's the most important because there you're dealing with his intimate devotees. And the other you're dealing with more general devotees. So both have to be taken care of, but by satisfying the advanced devotees who is trying to please the whole world, then pleasing these kings is part of that pleasing the whole world. So Yudhishthira's desire actually accommodates or includes the king's desire. Mm-hmm. But the king's desire don't include Yudhishthira's. Yes. Right? Yes. Not that they won't come, yes. But it just yes. means that it's just, so you have to see is the hierarchy. Yes. He began to speak. That is, Narada wanted Krishna to go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. Okay, we said that. Sri Uddhava said, O Lord, as the sage advised, you should help your cousin fulfill his plan for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. And you should also protect the kings who are begging for your shelter. Only one who has conquered all opponents in every direction can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. O Almighty One, thus in my opinion, conquering Jarasandha will serve both purposes. So, the point is he'll do that. It'll serve both purposes because you can't do the Rajasuya. So, what he's done is he started with the Rajasuya, went to the kings. That means conquering Jarasandha and brought it back to the Rajasuya. Right? So you can see it's which one he's favoring the most. But at the same time is that by killing Jarasandha, it takes care of him. Right? But by saying it in that way, it doesn't make it look like it's just a side thing. Otherwise, the kings, you know, the Yadavas will think they're just doing some side thing. No. It's very important because you can't do the other without this. You know, it's just like Duryodhana saying yes, but, you know, he's worried about Bhishma, you know, because of his attachment to the Pandavas. So he's saying, you know, everyone here should support and, you know, show him, and, you know, like that. Yeah. But that's being done in a devious way. This is being done in the way to actually try to please all the Lord and the devotees. So this is done from pure devotion. The other one is just... It's the secondary form of the political technique. Like that. Yes?
So the Yadavs weren't... I thought before the Yadavs were disappointed because they really wanted to fight. And now the Bhima and Arjuna are going to go on there.
No. It's that as kings, they want to see that the proper justice is there. So if others can take care of it, why it's not their area. And if not, just like in the Vedic concept, a king would only attack another kingdom if that other kingdom wasn't actually being managed properly and the citizens were suffering. Or that other king was attacking them and giving problem to his own citizens. So it's all about protecting the citizens. So in this case, these kings, because they've come to them and they've asked for the shelter, then they being in a position to offer it, then they should give it. Now, if Bhima himself can take care of it with a small entourage, then that's always better than taking a huge group and everyone being destroyed. You know, so it's not that they just want to fight. You know, that's not the thing. So, because those people like that always get destroyed. You know, is it live by the sword, die by the sword? So Kshatriyas don't live by the sword. They live by protecting the people. Sword is one of the things you use. But if someone is just about fighting, they'll always die. You know, and if not, then, you know, that's why cheap hotels always have served peanuts with their beer, so that they can choke on those and die. You know, so the material energy will get them some way or another. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada expresses Uddhava's reasoning in Krishna book. My dear Lord, first of all, let me say that the great sage Narad Muni has requested you to go to Hastinapur to satisfy King Yudhishthir, your cousin, who is making arrangements to perform the great sacrifice known as Rajasuya. I think, therefore, that your lordship should immediately go there to help the king in this great venture. However, although to accept the invitation by the sage Narada as primary is quite appropriate, at the same time, my lord, it is your duty to give protection to the surrendered souls. Right? So he's showing it is quite appropriate to take this. Narada Muni's requested, it's Yudhishthir, your cousin, they're great Vaishnav, so therefore it's quite appropriate. But at the same time, surrendered souls is quite appropriate. Like that. So it says is giving primary is taking care of what Yudhishthira, because that will take care of the secondary anyway. Yeah. Okay. Both purposes can be served if we understand the whole situation. Right? So now we're looking at going for the sacrifice, protecting the keys. But now if we look at the whole situation, that you can't have the sacrifice unless you've defeated all opposing kings, that's your solution. Both purposes can be served if we understand the whole situation. Unless we are victorious over all the kings, no one can perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. In other words, it is to be understood that King Yudhishthira cannot perform this great sacrifice without gaining victory over the belligerent King Jarasandha. Because he's trying to be the emperor. Why would he allow Yudhishthira to be the emperor? Right? He's already harassed Krishna, and Yudhishthira is aligned with Krishna, so then, you know, naturally... Therefore, to execute both purposes, we first have to kill Jarasandha. I think that if we can somehow or other gain victory over Jarasandha, all our purposes will automatically be served. The imprisoned kings will be also released. As for the Rajasuya sacrifice arrangement, in Hastinapur, it will be held, either because of the pious activities of the imprisoned kings or the impious activities of Jarasandha. So, because of impious activities of Jarasandha, therefore, then he'll be removed. Because otherwise, the pious activities of Jarasandha keep him in his powerful position. But it's his impious that will be his undoing. Does that make sense? So by removing him because of his impiety, then that will cause the sacrifice to be there. And the kings themselves, by being released, then they'll also be coming and giving tribute. Then that will all then add to the sacrifice. Because all these 10,000 or 20,000 kings and now will be allies with Yudhishthira. So that means the whole area, except for that city, you know, the kingdom that's directly connected to the Giri Vraja. The kingdom there, that may or may not be supportive. We'll have to see how that turns out. But we'll see that all those 20,000 kings who are kings of the area, of that he's trying to control and be the emperor of, that don't want to pay tax to him because they feel he's unqualified. Now you have that whole region is now supportive of Yudhishthira Maharaj. So either way, it works. The BBT purport mentions, according to Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one of Lord Krishna's qualities is chatura, clever, which means that he can perform various types of work at the same time. Thus the Lord could certainly have solved the dilemma of how to simultaneously satisfy King Yudhishthira's desire to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and the imprisoned king's desire for freedom. But Krishna wanted to give his dear devotee Uddhava the credit for the solution, and thus he pretended to be perplexed. Right? So he's doing that just it's the pastime, it's the human pastime, because otherwise if he's God, he knows everything, and it gets old really fast. You know, as far as, you know, the ocean of rasa. As Atmarama, it's fabulous. But the point is he, being in that fabulous position, wants to increase it. That's the ocean of rasa. So therefore, there's more taste in this than just being king and God and knowing it. Right? Does that make sense? Atmarama never gets old. It's just that you can get so much more if you interact on the devotional platform. Yes.
You were talking about management earlier. Yeah. You know, in this pastime, we hear about these, you know, such elevated ways that Krishna is dealing with so many things.
Yes.
By reading them, you would think, you know, they could devise a whole management course just based on this.
You could. But unfortunately, they read the management of a bald guy without a sika than the bald guys with sikas. What to do? At least they got the bald head right. Yeah, that's the whole point. Is when Prabhupada says everything's in his books and higher education is from his books, he literally means it. It's not an exaggeration. Devotees will take it as an exaggeration. Meaning, yes, it's the most important, but we have to get all these things from elsewhere. But if you don't follow in the footsteps of the Bhagavatam, it won't actually be successful. Because what is the Bhagavatam doing? What is the one main purpose? Because the essence of all the Vedic literature and the technique of how everything is done is given in Mahabharata. And then you can, you know, directly see the connection between the techniques being used in the Mahabharata and the Aparavidya itself, all the other branches of Vedic knowledge dealing with, you know, the Vedic, you know, the culture, your Sanskrit, your yajñas, your fine arts, your city planning, house planning, fighting, you know, Dhanur Veda, you know, Stapana Veda, all these different things. All these ones, you can see where it is. So if you can see what's going on, and then you just go back into those, you can get all the technique for it. But now what's the problem? Because now you've connected all the technique in the Vedic literature into its essential form of how it's applied, you know, in Varnashram, in the culture of Varnashram. You know? Like that, and you're giving devotees as the example for it. So, as far as Vyasadeva was concerned, this is now the perfection of his compiling the Vedic literature. But when Narad Muni came along, was he impressed? No, because he said people will just see the secondary, and you know what they can do. They'll avoid what they can't do, and they'll just pick and choose as they like. Because you didn't give what causes someone to use the secondary properly, which is the primary, which is devotion to Krishna. Because proper use is being used in Krishna's service. So here, because they're still using it for themselves, but using it in the expert way that the Vedic culture offers, but they're not doing it in a way that's about the primary, pleasing Krishna. So since they're keeping the principle of pleasing themselves, now pleasing themselves goes nicely along with the Vedic, as long as the Vedic pleases you. But if at any point some aspect doesn't please you, now the whole thing starts to break down. You know, it's just a matter of time from Satya Yuga when they were, you know, doing it up to today when they don't really do. Right? So that's the problem. So what was his solution? What was Narad Muni's solution? Right? You know, so his solution was to understand the relationship of everything with Krishna consciousness. That's the missing ingredient. So that's what Srimad Bhagavatam does. So understanding that, he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. So if in taking these particular literatures that we take, we do not make the connection to Srimad Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam's already giving it. Now, if you don't know the scripture or place to get the details on this, and you want to look at some modern knowledge and all that, yeah, that can be done. But if you don't connect it back to the Bhagavatam with the mood and qualities and purpose that the Bhagavatam says, then you've completely missed the boat. Because if you follow the boat, then the ocean is reduced down to the size of a calf's hoof, and you cross over. But if you miss the boat, you end up in the unlimited, vast material ocean. And that's without a rudder. Yeah. you know, people are complaining, you know, up the creek without a paddle. We're talking about no rudder either. So paddle around all you like, you're not getting it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is that if you don't see it in Bhagavatam, so yes, Bhagavatam has all that, but no understanding that the essence, then you can go back into secondary and see how to use it. But if you don't catch what's the primary, you can study the secondary until the cows come home, right? You're using a more pious example. And, you know, rather than, you know, how you say, the temperature dropping in the lower planetary systems, right? And so, therefore, then you will never be able to apply it in Krishna consciousness and get at anything of serious result. Like, you know yourself, okay. Devotees were distributing BTGs, right? Through the 60s, right? And then, was it 68 or 69, someone figured out about the big books? Was it Baba?
Budimanta.
He distributed the first big book. It was like a sensation. How many years did it take before people were doing huge amounts of big books? Very quickly, a few years. You know, and then the temple's exploding and everything, just a few years. So in 11 years, Prabhupada did what he did. Now, we've been dealing with political correctness and modern methods of management and taking management as the solution for devotional service since the mid-90s. So that's more than 20 years. Where's the result? So that means you can go on for 40 years. It still won't work. Because unless you connect it to Bhagavatam, it won't work. As soon as you do, it will work. Because Krishna doesn't care about your managing ability, because he's already managing it anyway. The modes in nature are making it happen. So now, do you want to connect it to him as devotion to him? That's the whole thing. Because sitting around in meetings having discussions about what can be done and not doing anything is not actually devotional service. It means if you're taking it as an indirect, you're cooperating with other devotees, nice, using nice language, nice, but who defines cooperation in the nice language? The karmis, not us, not the Vedic literatures. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that you have to be able to see, is that when we say that it's all there, we mean it. And then from there, anything that you want to connect can be done. But if you just are focusing on the secondary, then it'll never be successful. You can't. I mean, the greatest materialists in this world, who are very way more expert than us, and their lives are not turning out so great. So why would ours turn out fabulous? You can say, I'm a devotee, but yes, show it. So the areas where you do show the devotion, it's working. People are having faith, people are joining, people are taking up Krishna consciousness. But areas where we're not, it's not going anywhere. So that's the whole point. Is that, you know, you can say, no, but it takes time. Yeah, in the corporate world, it takes 90 days. Like that. That's what it takes. And since they're using corporate management, 90 days is over a long time ago. Does that make sense? Yeah. And you can't call corporate management government. It's corporate. They're two different things. Does that make sense? So you can't use the corporate and claim it's Kshatriya, and therefore be able to tax, do this and that. No. Corporations can sell something and make profit. That's how they get their money. They can't tax. Government can tax. They don't use corporate. Understand? So you can't just take what you like. At the same time as we're the Brahmins, we're the top. You can't do that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. You just have to take scripture and work it out. So that's the essence, is that we're trying to see the principle here. That's why we're trying to catch that point. You'll see the explanations are about that. And so when we get into too much detail on a secondary point, it's actually a digression from the conversation, because it's about how to connect the principle to the secondary, not how to run the secondary. But that's not what Bhagavatam's about. That's other literatures are for. Yes?
Light works there. Light works in corporate world, doesn't work here.
Because it's profit, and if a guy's a bozo, you fire him. But we'll use corporate, and at the same time as then we'll use tenure as being a Prabhupada disciple or being around for 30 years. Or what has that got to do with anything? You know how many senior vice presidents there are in a corporate, executive, whatever it is. There's a name for them. There's somebody gets so big that he's become redundant, but they can't get rid of him or don't want to, so they put him to the side as a vice president who actually has no power. So they do deal with that. But otherwise, if it doesn't work, the shareholders get rid of them. So if you want to use corporate, that means the general devotees have to be able to vote on that, or at least all the temple presidents. And then they can vote every year if they're whether they like the GBC or not. That's corporate. But no, you can't do that. Prabhupada said lifetime. So, you know what I'm saying? And so we're just picking, I think the modern term is cherry picking. We just pick what we like from what we're doing and not actually stick to the whole thing and take the whole package.
Half chicken.
We just like the half chicken. So like that. So the point is that all these things, economic, social, political, you know, religious, all these things become reconciled when it's connected to Krishna. How Krishna likes it to be connected to him. Otherwise, that you've connected it to Krishna, even if it's not how he likes, you will get benefit. It will progress, but at a much slower pace, and you'll get all the only term that comes to mind is slag. You know, slag?
Residue.
Yeah, not slag meaning what we're talking about, you know, the ladies. We're talking about slag meaning when you melt metal, you take raw ores and melt them, so all the dirt, that comes, that's slag. So the point is you use these improper, non-Vedic methods, you'll get the reactions from that. But you're engaging in Krishna's service, so you get the benefit from that. But you'll have to deal with the reactions that come from using a system that's impious. Because even though they may be following principles that are there in the Vedic system, they don't know it. And so they don't get the credit for following a Vedic system. They'll get the results that are good from it. But because of lack of the consciousness, they can adjust it at any time. So what's good today, they can throw out tomorrow for something new. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the point. The Vedic system, if it works, you know, why change it? But the modern, because it doesn't work, they're always changing. And they can't distinguish between what actually is working, what's not, because it's based on piety. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like the guy. He's there, you know, trying to... There's some injustice there, and he's coming forward and trying to support the people and all that. And he's getting in there and all that and doing the work, talking to people and trying to, you know, network and make the whole thing go. And it starts to progress, and it develops as a movement. But then as it becomes powerful and established and everything like that, now he wants to maintain that position. Well, before he wasn't. He just wanted to help the people. Then when he gets established, now he starts, you know, being political like everybody else. Right? And now, then he, you know, people don't like him anymore. Then he's just another political person or party like everybody else. Is that what he says? You know, so that's the way it is. So if he stuck to that, and it was about protecting the citizens, but now he has authority to do that, then it would go very smoothly. But it's not about that. It starts like that, but then they get distracted. Because they don't have a set standard. They just know that they want to help, but then, you know, all these things get distracting. So unless you have the Vedic, that here are the rules, so if you're in charge, you have to do like this, then only you know that they have to be done. Otherwise, in the modern, what's the rule on the government? So is there rules about how you deal? So it means the people have a vote, they have a voice, but is there rules what you're supposed to do with it? People send in a petition. You know, 500,000 people have a petition for this to be done. Is there a rule what they're supposed to do with it? Right? What judgment is there? What things not? How to judge whether it's a good thing or not? No, it's just that they're in charge, and because they've been elected by these people, now they consider it. Right? Does that make sense? So there's no rules like that. So that's the thing. The Vedic gives the rules. You know, you understand where is the difference between what the public requires and who's qualified to fulfill the needs of the public. Because if public could do it themselves, what do they need leadership for? But since they're not doing it themselves, they need leadership. That means that leadership has to be qualified to fulfill their needs. So that means it's not just somebody voted in. It has to be someone qualified. So is there a system that only qualified people who can do this are therefore up for voting? Because a common person doesn't know. So now let's say, okay, you have X amount of people that are up for being voted, and all of them, each one of them is good. Each one of them could run the country. So therefore, anyone they picked, it would not be wrong. Then that would be, but then who chooses them? And then the pub, so therefore, the public chooses, the public this and that, and then the public suffers. You know what I'm saying? So that's the, so the of the people, by the people, for the people, then doesn't necessarily take on the idyllic concept that it was designed to do. Is it about the Bhagavata?
Yes.
Okay.
It seems that in this situation we cannot fix any other aspect before building Brahminical culture.
That's the point. Prabhupada said, first you establish Brahminical culture. He very clearly says that. Because if you have Brahmins, you can make Kshatriyas. If there's no Brahmins, you do not end up with Kshatriyas. They may have a Kshatriya nature, but they won't act properly as Kshatriyas because they don't have the training. Only Brahmins can train them. How to do, the administration and that, another Kshatriya could teach them. So they learn from their father, they learn from, whoever they learn from the internet. Okay, but how to use that in it properly, what's the actual purpose of it, that you have to learn from Brahmins. So if you don't create Brahminical culture and have that position of Brahmins, you will not have the rest of it. So you're trying to establish economics, the community, the governance, without Varnashram, right? Means Brahmins, that's there. Governance, that's the next one. Economics, that's there. Then you have the community, that's the last one. So how is this working? We want Varnashram without Varnashram. So it's like Prabhupada says, we want Ram Rajya without Ram. We want that perfection. Even still, political groups in India talk about Ram Rajya. People want that, but they don't want wrong. So that's the point, is without connecting to Krishna, you won't get. Does that make sense? So, yeah. This isn't a simplification. This is not an over-exaggeration. It's just, this is what the Shastra says. We have to have that faith in Shastra. And if we do, then we'll try to follow Shastra rather than whatever, piques our fancy. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Devotees have an exposure to both modern as well as...
They have an exposure to both. Okay.
Modern as well as Vedic. And they know that modern is changing and Vedic is always a constant. They know everything in Bhagavatam, examples in Bhagavatam.
They know everything in Bhagavatam.
Why is it? Yeah. And why is it that they still prefer
people knowing the Vedic, knowing the modern, why do they prefer the modern? Because they know the Vedic, because they don't know the Vedic. Because if you knew the Vedic, you would not prefer the modern. It would be like, okay, here's the thing. I take paneer, I take tomatoes, I take butter, right? Some fenugreek, some dhanyapata, like that, and there's a recipe, I mix that all together, and I get a preparation, right? Or, the modern is, I go down to the store, and I buy it in this funny little soft package that I can take it out and reheat it. Put it in the microwave. Okay? So, what does that mean? If you prefer the microwave, means you absolutely do not actually understand what's real food. Means you've heard about it, but you don't contemplate it, so therefore Krishna doesn't reveal how it works. They'll sit and contemplate all day modern things. They won't contemplate the Veda. And if they say, well, I have no time, I doubt it. I really, really doubt it. They can say, but that means then they're overdoing that because you don't need to put in that much time. It's like quoting our bald-headed guy without the sika. He gives the example of that there's a guy sawing some wood because that's his job. And then another guy comes along and goes, your saw is not very sharp. If you stopped for a minute, sharpened your saw, then your work would go much better. And he says, sorry, I don't have any time. I can't do that. So therefore, I'm not buying it. I'm not going to be in any way, shape, or form on this point generous. If that's all they know, they don't know about the Vedic, they're trying to use it in Krishna's service, they come from a professional background, they're trying to connect that to Krishna and their enthusiasm, that's great, that's fabulous. That's wonderful. But such a person, naturally, when they're shown the Vedic, they would be able to take that and see, oh, this is how it goes, and that's how it goes, and start to contemplate, and like that, until they can then see how to use the Vedic in the modern context. And if they're not, I can't say anything good about that. I actually can't. You know, I mean, it would be nice if I could, but I can't. You know, and to say, oh, that other's not possible. No, it's very possible. It's very, very possible. Okay? Yeah?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura ki.